Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yes, indeed. And Julie is now going to perform an aria from one of Mozart's works. And we are ready when you're ready.
Okay, hands over your ears, everybody.
Oh, my gosh. What a movie this is. 1984. That's not the name of the movie. That's when it came out. Amadeus is the name of the movie. From 1984, and Milos Forman is the director.
Yeah.
Starring F. Murray Abraham and Tom Hulce is how I understand Hulce, that is pronounced.
Oh, is it Hulce? Well,
that's what I looked up, but
well, you know what?
It could be Hulce.
Cut all this out. We don't need to discuss it. It's fine.
Yes. And,
I'm going to say Hulce, though.
And what a movie this is. This is really something. So it's about Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. And I guess it's a biopic. I have no idea how historically accurate it is.
It's not. It's really kind of a fantasy.
Okay. All right.
It's kind of done in the vein of... hold on. I've got these things written down. It's kind of like when Aaron Sorkin did Steve Jobs and Network... where he wasn't necessarily telling he was using that story generally as a framework to look at something else, right?
Okay.
It wasn't the exact story of Facebook. It wasn't the exact story of Steve Jobs. When you look at everything, it doesn't really hold together fact-wise. But as Steve Wozniak said, when he saw Steve Jobs, he goes, well, yeah, a lot of stuff in there wasn't exactly right, but it felt real. It felt right.
Felt right. Okay.
And so this, like Salieri, there is no evidence that he had this great, you know, envy. I mean, this is just them going kind of like RRR. What if? In that sense.
Okay.
And in that sense, it does one thing that I think is really accurate for sure, is you really understand more about Mozart's music. And maybe why it's so special in the way that Salieri appreciates it.
Yeah.
And what a genius he is. And that's all true. And, you know, the fact that he was immature and the fact that he had a weird laugh and all that stuff is true. But this relationship, it's because it's really about Salieri.
True.
I mean,
yeah.
It's about Mozart, but it's really about Salieri who's telling the story.
Right.
And... I first saw this, well, actually, whenever this came out, I had seen the play a few months before that at a local theater group.
Oh, cool.
I just loved it. Well, I discovered now, when I was reading up on the movie, they're like, oh, the movie, the playwright kind of reimagined everything and kind of made it all bigger and a little different focus and all this. And so, but I saw the play and then I saw the movie and I was like, oh my gosh, this Mozart is so obnoxious. I felt much like Salieri. I hate this movie so much. Because I could not stand the fart jokes, all the things, right? The backwards talking about Kiss My Ass and everything. But then Rose recently was saying, you know, I can't believe you guys haven't done this movie because I feel like it's saying so much that... is kind of what you and Scott are all about when you're talking about it. So I went, okay. So I watched it and went, wow, without that other influence and maybe after years of watching movies differently, I really could appreciate it.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. And, I think we watched two different versions of it. You watched the original release and I watched the director's cut, which is the only thing I could find.
Our library had the DVD of the original.
Okay.
And I wasn't aware there was a director's cut, though that does make sense until I was listening to a podcast talking about it. And they were saying all you can get is the director's cut.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. And the director's cut is rated R and the regular version is PG.
Yeah. And when I don't know if you read about it, I was reading the director said you know, we had to cut this one thing, especially where maybe, well, we can talk about all that later.
Yeah, probably hard to talk about what that is.
Right. But he was kind of talking about what it was. And I was like, oh, I could see where that would make sense in the context of the movie. Mm-hmm. But I can see how easily you took it out and everything still got said fairly much the same, yeah, I think.
I think so, too.
So, yeah. But he said, why not put in everything I want? It's the director's cut. And I went, well, fair enough.
There you go. You bet. Yeah. Very good. Very good. So, what is this movie?
Yeah. So the basic story is that Salieri is the court composer for, in Vienna.
Yeah,
so is it the Hungarian Empire?
Okay.
Here's the worst
Emperor thing, Joseph II.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So he's the court composer in Vienna for Emperor Joseph II, did you say?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And played by Jeffrey Jones most wonderfully. And he is thrilled by the fact that Mozart is coming to town. And he's heard his, you know, music performed. He just loves it. He cannot wait to meet this guy. He's entertaining himself by walking through the crowded party where he's going to be conducting the orchestra for the king. And he's trying to guess who he is. And then he winds up in a room where this immature goofball who's crude and all these things shows up. Oh, and it's Mozart. So that's not really a spoiler because I think that's played up in everything we know about it.
Sure.
But he is so disillusioned. And then the more he sees Mozart's genius compared to his own more pedestrian music and the fact that he has always wanted to serve God through his music, and here's this guy who's an idiot, but who's doing it so much better.
Hmm.
He gets angrier and angrier at God and decides he's going to take it out on Mozart.
Hmm.
And that's kind of the essence of the movie, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. You bet. Is it? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure what else to say about it before spoilers, but... But yeah, it's really terrific. It didn't feel like an 80s movie to me at all when I was watching it. And I had seen it before. This isn't the first time.
Okay.
But it sure holds up. It's really nice. Yeah. All
it
of the sets and the costumes and everything. It doesn't feel like this movie's aged.
No, and they did things like film it in Prague in the old parts so it would feel very authentic. They used only the light that they would have had. I don't know how they did that, unless they just had mirrors everywhere that were reflecting the candlelight. I remember hearing that recently about, this is why there were so many mirrors. It reflected the candlelight, so it's like there were more candles. And I went, oh, what a bunch of geniuses. But anyway, so it was all done with candlelight and natural light and that sort of thing. And so it was a technical work of art, too, in that way.
Yeah, it's great. And there
was so well made.
It is very well made. I'm reminded of, you know, like when Salieri looks at a composition from Mozart and he can imagine what it sounds like. He's looking at it and it's just his breath is being taken away. And then they play it, you know, you can hear it like he hears it. And I love that. That was great too.
That was one of my favorite bits because I can do things like I have done so much cooking and I'm interested in it enough that I can read a recipe and kind of know what it should taste like. And the ones that interest me are the ones where they're doing something unexpected and I'm like, I can't imagine what that'll be like. I want to try it. You know, cool. I'll try making it. But a lot of them you can look at and go, oh yeah, I like this, and I can get a sense of it. And I was like, that's like this times 1,000 for music. And I loved the way they would do that is show him reading, or Mozart even, reading the music. And you could kind of hear it playing over everything. And then they would also take a major piece of music from maybe we were watching an opera. Or usually you were watching somebody write some music or talk about music in a different way. And then they would take it and start playing it over the next scene. And because you knew what the music was doing in the opera you'd seen it in or whatever, you could see how that was making a bit of a commentary on the scene we were going to see next. or they would do it also vice versa. So like when the father is in there and you've got Don Giovanni and all that kind of thing. So it was really the music, I think. I don't listen to classical music. I don't listen to music very much anyway. Mm-hmm. I like classical music and I love Mozart, but I don't think about it very much. Mm-hmm. Do you listen to classical music?
I do. I have a bunch of stuff that I like, but yeah. I don't know that much about it. Right. And I don't listen all the time or anything, but I do like it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have some favorites. So, I mean, I love creative process, period. You know, when I love hearing writers talk about writing. I do a lot of that, and I like hearing or watching artists draw. I think that's amazing, and seeing this, you know. There was a documentary on Disney Plus about the Beatles, and there's this part where Paul McCartney comes up with Get Back, Get Back, and I was mesmerized by that, how he just kind of almost pulled it out of the atmosphere, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm fascinated by just creativity. I love these parts of Amadeus.
Well, and it's interesting because that's interesting to me, but not in the same way that listening to people talk about something and explain it to me is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost the same thing, but it's not quite. So like a lot of the podcasts I like to listen to are ones that will talk about a book or a movie or a piece of music and go, and here's what's happening. And this is why they're doing this. Like Sticky Notes talks about classical music, if nobody's tried that. And having it explained so I know what the artist is trying to convey and or what I missed, which is a lot usually, I just love that. So it's the other side of what you're talking about is they're kind of explaining, here's what they did with all this. Not necessarily how they got there. Sometimes it is. And so this, to me, I guess that's why I was talking about, you know, the way the music will flow back and forth between the so-called real life and the theatrical performance or the being written is I was like, oh, it's like the music is explaining the movie more. At the same time that we're seeing the application of this music and how it works in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was like a close reads kind of a thing, as well as like you're saying, explaining that creative process.
Yeah. Or showing it to us anyway.
Right.
Because well, in a way, there's no explaining it. And then the other thing is, you know, having experienced a lot of that is like there is no way. There is no one way that people work, you know. And, it's like, okay, if I can just do what Mozart did, get myself a pool table.
Get tuberculosis and drink a lot and and have a lot of women, have a lot of partying going on.
Right, right. But terrific, terrific movie. So, definitely watch it, but let's move into talking about it for sure. So, one thing that you didn't mention too much of is that it opens with Salieri as an old man attempting suicide.
Yes.
And he's brought to what I guess you'd call a sanitarium.
Mm-hmm. I think it's an insane asylum.
Okay, insane asylum.
I don't
asylum.
Know if you know that till later.
Okay.
Until the very end, but
yeah. And then is visited by a priest. And then the whole movie is this conversation with this priest where he's telling him all of this, his life, you know, his life as it relates to Mozart anyway.
He's making his confession.
Exactly. Yeah. But it, you know, it's not much of a confession. He's like, he's like, this is what I did. It's not like, I'm so sorry I did this, you know.
True. He is not sorry. He is often very proud of what he did.
Yeah.
And especially, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and at the end, didn't he absolve himself?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, he was absolving as the what does he say? I'm the Pope of the mediocre.
Yes.
So I absolve you, Father, because he's like, you're a mediocre priest. He gave him no advice. And let's face it, anybody who's faced with this horrific story is just going to sit there dumbfounded. But he's going through the insane asylum as they're wheeling him away to the water closet or whatever. Yeah, and I absolve you and you. I mean, just showing how crazy he was.
But it was so well done how, at Jesus, at the very beginning, how the author of the script set up this, what his situation was, what Salieri's situation was. So he's to the priest, he's saying, yeah, you know, here, let me play this. You know, did you ever hear that?
That was
no,
great.
No, never did hear that. How about this one? This was my most popular one. Have you ever heard that? No. And then he plays another one. And he goes, oh, I've heard that.
And he's humming it.
Yeah. He could sing that thing or just, hum all those notes. And he says, well, that was Mozart. Yeah. And it was just
like I wrote over 40 operas, but this is what you remember.
That's right. Yeah. And well, that sets everything up. It's just this jealousy that permeates and drove him mad.
Well, and I love the way it began because, you know, I always forget the framework. And the framework's important because he's stopping to comment on things and they'll pull you back into that setting. But when he starts off saying, you know, I loved music and I just wanted to do it for God. And even as he's describing that, he's morphing this desire to serve God through music. All I wanted was to serve God and to be the most famous composer in Europe.
There you go.
And to have everybody, you know, worship my music so that it would glorify you, God.
Uh-huh.
And you're just like, see, already you're not being honest with yourself. You don't really want to glorify God. You want to use God as a vending machine. I'll be celibate. I'll do this and that.
Right.
Yeah,
he's putting himself in this exalted position, which doesn't actually even exist. So it's like he's not aware of what his actual sin is.
Yeah.
But he's just like, I have a quote in front of me. All I wanted was to sing to God. He gave me that longing and then made me mute. Why? Tell me that. If he didn't want me to praise him with music, why implant the desire like a lust in my body and then deny me the talent? And, but it was like, if he didn't want me to praise him with music, you know, so in his head, he's like, I'm doing this for the very best reasons. And, but yet he says, like you said, I want to be the most famous one.
I want to be immortalized.
I want to be immortalized. I want to be loved by the people. Yeah.
Yes. And when you said that quote about, you know, why did he give me this if he didn't want me to use it? He's already being like Adam, right?
Mm,
this woman you gave me, God, she gave me the apple.
Right.
This is your fault, God.
Very nice.
You made me want this.
Very nice.
You know, and he's so the whole time through the movie, when you kind of realize that as a key to how he's off on the wrong foot from the beginning.
Yeah, and we know he's off on the wrong foot from the very beginning because he's talking about his life as a kid.
Yeah.
He's like, I want to do music. And his dad's like, don't do music, you know. And then he says, and then one day there was a miracle.
God,
just for me, God killed my dad.
He choked to death on a piece of
food. Like, just for me.
Yeah.
And then I was released to do this, which I am doing for you, God.
Right.
I'm doing it for you, yeah.
Right.
But
as you watch the movie, every time he gets more upset at Mozart's genius, he's then again talking to God about how angry he is, or telling the priest how angry he was with God, and then shifting the blame again to something else. It's the fault of this little man, Mozart. It's the fault of this. It's this fault. And eventually, it's God's fault.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and that's the part of the speech I think about. Why did he give me this lust? It's, you know, it's not my fault. I can't help it if I felt that way.
Oh,
I was being unfairly tested.
Yeah, right.
It's like, but then you see, and maybe I'm skipping ahead too far, but you see at the end of the movie, when Mozart is dictating from his sickbed the Requiem And Salieri's sitting there kind of either, no, you're going too fast.
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing it. And then he'll go, I don't understand. And Mozart, for once, we see him being authoritative, impatient, and because this is something he sees so clearly. He's like, no, it's like this. And this echoes that. And that does this and emphasizes these things. So it's what you're saying about the creative process.
Hmm.
But for him, it's just flowing. Yeah. He doesn't have to stop and work on it. It's right. Just which thing is he going to write? The opera or the Requiem?
Hmm.
And so Salieri doesn't think that way. He's trying to catch up. And then he'll go, oh, wait, I get it. I see what you're doing. And you look at it and you go, if you had been more generous and less selfish at the beginning, you might have been able to have a relationship like this and learn. Enjoy the music for what it was, and then eventually go ahead and serve God in your own way with your music.
Yeah.
But you cut yourself off from that because you were so selfish.
Daddy did, yeah, and that's exactly it. There was another exchange with Father, it says here, Father Vogler.
Ah, yes.
And I think that it illustrates his frame of mind, too. So Salieri says, leave me alone. And the priest says, I cannot leave alone a soul in pain. And then Salieri says, do you know who I am? And Vogler, the father, says, it makes no difference. All men are equal in God's eyes.
Oh, right.
And Salieri says, are they? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is it. He's like, really? Just like you were saying right there. It is really a sad thing that he sees himself as incapable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're right. I mean, what an opportunity he lost. If he could have had a relationship with Mozart that was healthy, then the things he would have learned from him.
Yeah.
But he was turned off by who he was, his personality.
Oh my gosh, which is like,
yeah, so he's like, how can you possibly work through this person, God, when I'm here, you know, in my exalted state?
I'm trying hard, man. Me,
right?
Yeah.
Yes. It's beautiful. It's great.
Well, and let's face it, you know, when we think, so he thinks his music is great, and it is. Time has shown that. But can we appreciate greatness in other people no matter how unworthy they seem to have it?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not being serious. He's not working hard on it. He's sitting down. One of my favorite little bits is, you know, here's Salieri. He's the court composer. He wrote that little piece that was played to welcome you at, you know, some event. And he goes, oh, I remember that. Well, that was a funny little piece, wasn't it? And Salieri gets this look on his face like he's sucking a lemon.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, and he sits down and he just tosses it off. And he goes like this, right? Like this. And then just keeps going. And he goes, but you know, that's not quite right. It needs to be like this, right? And he's looking over his shoulder at Salieri, who's just standing there kind of trying to hold it together.
Yeah.
Because his music is basically being critiqued in this toss-off way. And he's not meaning it as a critique. He's just thinking about the music. What's not working here?
Hmm.
And he goes, oh, maybe like this. And he does something, and suddenly it's just better. You can hear how much better it is.
Hmm.
And it just shows his capability, also his lack of awareness, because he's only thinking about the music and he's not good with people.
Right. Yep, that's a good point. Yeah, and then from that fateful meeting at that point, then, his jealousy just intensifies throughout the movie.
Right.
Yeah, Salieri's just, he turns into, actively working against Mozart. And, he's schemey.
He's a schemer. I like it.
Yep.
He's
schemey. Schemer.
He's schemey. Yep. Schemey's better.
Yeah.
Well, and so then, because the thing that's interesting too is he really doesn't like Mozart, but he hides it behind this facade of being pissed off at God, who he is mad at.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, I'm going to do all this stuff to Mozart to hurt you, God. I'm going to ruin your creature because you didn't give me what I think I should have had. And I was like, is this not just how the devil is always talked about?
Yep.
No one knows what it is that made Lucifer turn from being God, the best angel of all, to being, you know, the devil. But some theologians speculate it's when he heard the whole plan of, you know, you're going to become one of them. What? I do not think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Amazing.
We're the best.
That's right. And
yeah. So anyway, that's how it's been portrayed a lot of the time. Yeah.
And Salieri, I mean, he doesn't see in himself. I mean, he seems to be alone of everybody that we see in the movie in recognizing how brilliant Mozart is. Mm-hmm. It's like when he sees him play something or he looks at a piece of his music, his breath is taken away. I mean, he is stunned by it. And there are people around that may enjoy what he's doing, but he's like the only one who can see how amazing mm-hmm. that is, you know? And
which is ironic, of course.
Yeah, and I mean, that alone, he can't see in himself that his ability to see that means that it means something about his talent. It means something about his capability. But yeah, instead, he's just completely jealous, and he falls. That instead of exciting him and raising him up and saying, oh, this is now my new goal, is to get something in this new way that I just saw. Mm-hmm. Instead, he falls into, I'm nothing. I am mediocre. You know?
Yeah, because he doesn't miss a performance of Mozart's stuff. So even if all he did was nurture him so he could get more of that music.
Yeah.
He's not doing it. And because, you know, when he's talking about the Requiem, he's saying, so here's how it's going to be. It's going to be the coffin in the middle of the church and the beautiful music playing, and I'm going to be conducting them.
Right.
I'm the one who's going to play him out. You know, I'm like, oh man, stop it.
Wow. Yep.
Yeah.
Stunning stuff. Then he got all schemey, said, I can do this. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And you know, you got to admit, it's a lot harder to take stuff when people are being over the top and, you know, caricaturish in their own behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And, for sure. Yeah, we have plenty of examples around, so.
Yeah, and he doesn't seem to notice, well, he sees it firsthand, but the Mozart's struggles, you know. Mozart, he's a genius, and I think that there's some commentary about genius, you know, and what it's like. But he's imperfect. It's not like I have this and therefore all is well. He's got all kinds of problems that stem from the very thing that makes him a genius, which is I don't fit in anywhere. And, he simply has trouble even being, in society. You know what I mean? He's puzzled by a lot of it and you know, has these passions that other people don't seem to have. He wants to go these directions, you know, that other people haven't thought of going in or have actually forbidden people to go in, right?
Oh, right, because of the storylines and things. Right, but I was thinking also of the fact that when you watch this, you really feel for him because he was a child star, so to speak.
Mm.
You know, so when they talk about him being 6 years old and they're showing him playing for, you know, all the high up people with a handkerchief tied over his eyes so he can't see.
Yeah.
He's always been on display. He's never had a normal life. His father has just drug him all over the place to play and dominates him. So he's never been allowed to mature. You know, this is why his wife is so important. She both loves him and enters into the world that he loves.
Yeah.
But she also is good at managing the money and talking about, well, you don't have time to do both these things. Do the thing that makes the most money, all that stuff. She's got to be the practical one.
Yeah.
And she can help him kind of mature, but he never gets the chance to do it.
Yeah, and that was one of the scenes that was added, by the way, when I looked up what it was. There came a time where there was an opening to tutor someone very important, and I can't remember who this someone was. And because Mozart... this is a strange thing, and I'm assuming it's historical, but it's like he doesn't seem to be making a ton of money off these operas he's writing. They said something like, well, you know, when you take on these students, that's when you make your regular salary.
Mm-hmm.
So because he's so odd, people aren't hiring him for that.
No, it's because all the higher up people at the court, because it's like the king's niece or something.
Right, right.
So all the higher up people at the court are sabotaging him.
Okay, so yeah.
By saying, you know, you don't have the right credentials. You have to fill out all these paperwork and stuff.
Exactly, okay. So, and you can tell me if this was in your version, but what happened is his wife, Mozart's wife, shows up at Salieri's place with stuff that Mozart has written.
Right.
And says, you know, can you please look at this to show it to the king so that he'll hire him to be this tutor. That was in yours?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then Salieri says to her, come back tonight.
Yeah, that wasn't in mine.
Okay. So he said, come back tonight because there needs to be a trade here. And, he's meaning some type of a sexual trade. So then she does come back that night. And she starts to disrobe. And he rings the bell for his servant and says, get her out of here. So he humiliated her.
Right.
Yeah. And that was in there. So anyway.
That's what I had read about it. Mm-hmm. And the directors, or somebody else maybe, was saying, you know, here's the thing. That's what got an R rating. They're like, but when you look at the context of what was going on, it was not sexual at all. It was showing so much about the morals of the people, love, what she was willing to sacrifice for Mozart, the way Salieri was willing to use anybody at hand, and he didn't care what he did to them.
Yeah.
To get his own way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it was after that that he became, well, Mozart's father passes away. And then that's when Salieri becomes, well, somebody that reminds him of his father, I guess we could say. And he's wearing this robe and this mask, the same type that his Mozart's father wore. Mm-hmm. And then requests this requiem and says, here's some money, write this thing.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then there was another scene right around the same time where he went to a place. So now he's very needy. He has no money, Mozart. He has no money. So he goes to this house, and this house is, there's like a bunch of dogs at the house that are not well-behaved at all.
That's not in mine.
That's not in yours. And so I think this is the only other significant scene that wasn't in yours. So he sits down with the person that he was going to tutor, this young girl, and starts to play. But the dogs are just going nuts, and the parents don't care. They're loving the piano playing, and they won't keep the dogs quiet or won't attempt it at all, and are like, listen, dogs, listen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally he's like, I just can't do this, and walks out.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah, so I don't know that those scenes add a ton. But they were interesting anyway.
Mm-hmm, yeah, but they probably didn't necessarily hurt it.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. But when Mozart writes an opera and then they're performing it, I mean, that was just stunning stuff. And then he performs it. Yeah, absolutely loved it. And then it won the Emperor Yawned.
Oh, I know.
And then it was like, oh, you know, that was another miracle, right? It was another, according to Salieri.
Too many notes. Yeah,
it's
like, exactly.
You know, if it's for me, that's a miracle. And so he just said, you know, yeah, if he yawns twice, then it's only going to be performed one more time. Or if he yawns three times, it's just done. And that's amazing stuff. Yeah. So, Yeah.
Well, and you could see when you were saying, you know, he didn't make much money, and I think it's because they were deliberately also manipulating like reviews and things so that, like you said, why did this only play 9 times? Yeah, why didn't it come? Because when he does, is it the magic flute is the last thing they show?
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
He does the more comic one for the broader audience, and his friend is helping run that theater or part of that theater group, and says, let's, you know, do this. I'll give you half the box office. And when Salieri goes and takes the money from him and says, well, Mozart's sleeping, you can't see him right now. He says, well, give him this. This is his share from tonight. And he hands him this bag full of gold, and he goes, and the guy said he'd give you another 100 ducats if you finished it tomorrow. So he's lying to him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Salieri is, because he's pretending it's the guy who wants to wreck him.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, well, yeah, because terrible. He was just the worst.
Yeah.
Right. But I was like, was that 100 ducats in there? It was a significant amount of money, no matter what. So he was making a ton when he had full access to the common people, as the movie is showing it anyway.
Right, right.
And of course, they're only showing operas, which I found, of course, entertaining. And, you know, when Salieri's going, and then this one note joins this other note, and you go, oh, the purity. And you're like, oh, I can hear it too. Because he did a lot of symphonies. He did a lot of other pieces. But those are boring when you're watching it in the context of a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we only see the operas. But I loved that they spent enough time on them so you could see what was going on in each piece and understand how different the music was for each one. And kind of what was trying to be told in the story.
Yeah, it was just so well done in that way. Yeah, I enjoyed all the music. It was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was even a dance number. What do we call that in an Indian movie again?
An item number?
An item number. There we go.
Yeah. Well, that, when they go to the party, when his father and him go to the party.
Yes.
They're having to play. It's not exactly truth or dare, but it made me think of it. But what I loved about that is it went along with him picking out the different wigs, having the pink wig and the crazy wig and going, I love them all. I wish I had 3 heads so I could wear all the wigs and laughing. And then you see that party. And so the playing the piano upside down and all these young people are just having a blast. And so it's kind of like watching during the jazz age. To me, it did something that showed this wasn't old-fashioned classical music to them. It was the newest thing.
Yeah, it was it.
He was the latest rage. He was, I don't know, like David Bowie back in the day when David Bowie was a thing. For sure. Right? Yep. Something crazy like
that's
that.
A good choice.
I'm too old. I'm
David
too old
Bowie
to know
had cool hair.
He had hair like that. That's what made me think of it.
Yeah.
And the crazy makeup and everything and the effects. And that's just what they show Mozart like. And since this movie was done in, did you say 1984?
Yep.
That would kind of go along that way. So it was fresh. It was new. It was current.
Yeah.
And it kind of shows you how it was real life, not old, boring history, despite the different clothes and things.
Yeah.
So I liked that tone of the movie. And that's why the music meant a lot to Salieri, because he wanted to be immortalized and he couldn't see the future really. But for Mozart, the thing I love that they did with him is he only cared about the music. I mean, he partied, he lived his life, he loved his father, he, you know, had his disappointments and his flaws and everything. But whenever music came up, you could see that without being serious or boring or dull about it, that's the thing that he understood and that mattered. So when they're arguing about the opera, should it be in Italian? Should it be in German? He's like, I don't care, pick a language, whatever. You know, if what matters is the story we're going to tell and the music that's going to go with it. You know, I can do a challenge, do German.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. And he did love to be loved.
Yes.
Mozart. Yeah.
With a father like that, you'd want any reassurance you could get.
It did matter to him, and he was constantly denied that by those other people in the court. Because, I mean, it's like brilliant stuff. No, I'm just...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering too. There is the idea. There's the big picture. That, of course, the reason this movie resonates today still is all the things we're talking about. Salieri's wrestling, he thinks with God, but really it's his own blind spot about himself and what he's motivated by that he never tries to even see. Mozart, a genius who is so flawed in so many ways, but has a gift that he is truly serving. And as Salieri says, you know, this, the voice of God is in Mozart's music.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a question that resonates today, right? Do we recognize genius when it's in front of us? Or do we settle for political correctness?
Yeah. So many times that answer is no, isn't it? I mean, just right. If you look at history, how many artists of any stripe are noticed only after they've died or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's because he's pushing against society and stuff. I mean, like with Figaro, he wants to do Figaro, which is very interesting to him for these reasons. And and the establishment says, no, we don't want that. You know, that's banned. And I only ban things if it's important to ban things.
It's immoral.
Right. So right. It's like, you're not going to go there. Just the struggles of people that are geniuses, I think... I was going to say outcasts, but it's not quite like that. It's like they can be not all the way in, you know what I mean? Held right. at arm's length, because they're so odd and people don't know what to make of that.
Well, and in this case, we've got the perfect representation too, because you have the king who is truly a mediocre person. If he rules the way he does music, you know, they're just going along based on momentum.
Oh, for sure.
And all the advisors that we see for the music are the intelligentsia. They know what's proper. They know what's right. They know what their ideas are. And they've already judged Mozart based on his own personal idiosyncrasies, which, like, you know, any, like I say, yeah. I didn't like the movie first time I saw it for that very reason. He was so obnoxious seeming to me.
And like, you know, every organization, you know, those people are fat and happy and they're not going to do anything that would make him uncomfortable.
Right.
That's
they're just going to praise him and manipulate him.
Yeah, they're not going to do that at all. Yeah. And that's what's required for progress in art, right, is to be... to be that. So, or just to be pushing an envelope, right? Or to be, I don't know, I was going to use the word edgy, but that's just not the right word. It's like they're poking the established agreed thing in order to kind of reach out of that. You're making people uncomfortable. And there's something about art that is uncomfortable in some spaces that is intriguing, you know?
Yeah, and just depends on what the current standard is for proper art, because right now we're living in a time where to be edgy and controversial and out there is the accepted way.
Yeah, and it's not
it's funny,
for
it's art's flipped.
Sake, it's for the sake of being that. It's the sake of pushing that, which is what's happening, rather than the art is pushing that, you know what I mean? It's not for the art's sake, it's for the pushing's sake, is what I think is happening a lot today. But you know, in the publishing world, you know, for novels and stuff, you know, Twilight is a hit and therefore they want 20 more Twilights.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not writing Twilight, then they don't really want that. They want where they see a trend going. And that's an interesting thing to me, because it's like they're creating the trend rather than, you know, more organically letting things rise, you know. And when people do something that's unique or, you know, is there anything really unique? But is there, you know, when they're doing something that's different or putting things together that are different, that's a little bit harder to get through.
And look at the movie world. how many Marvel movies do we need?
Yeah.
You know, because this is what's selling. Of course, this is when business is driving art instead, both the Twilight and the Marvel things that we're talking about. And that's also kind of the way, because all those people are being very, you know, well rewarded, as you're saying. And then, of course, there's the all kinds of different standards. And that's why I was saying with the real edgy art and the other stuff. So it just depends on what you're trying to get out of it. Are you trying to get fame out of it? That's what Salieri wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully money too. But he had money. He wanted to be immortalized. The other people are happy just being comfortable.
Yeah.
Doing their Disney music or whatever it is over and over again. Right, exactly.
And
then you have Mozart, who's shown, that's why the Requiem writing scene is so important at the end. You can see it's just, he just kind of sits back and goes, okay, just a minute. And he, okay, now we're going to do this. And he could just see it, you know, and that's how they show his creative process. And I've heard of people like that, you know.
Yeah, Paul McCartney is one of them.
Just
judging from what I saw on that documentary, it was amazing. Felt like he pulled it out of the air. He just played it until it was right.
Well, that's it.
You know, and it's just like
the refining.
The fact that it was right. I mean, it's almost like it existed to be discovered. You know what I mean? There's that mystical piece that we all imagine.
That's what Tolkien said, right? Mm-hmm. Right? He felt like he discovered the landscape and the Lord of the Rings, not the story necessarily, but, you know, like Aragorn surprised him when he showed Strider. When he showed up in the corner of the inn, he's like, I didn't know who this was. I was curious to see what was going to happen.
Oh, man.
That kind of thing. That's when you're in the zone creatively. Yeah, you know, you're really working the way you should. Well, the other thing I was thinking is, so Amadeus was actually, that's what Mozart, he was called a version of that. He didn't use that particular version of that name. There was a different, I can't remember which language it was, but that's, he preferred that to Wolfgang. But it means loved by God. So the movie, he's never called Amadeus in there, right?
Yeah.
But if it means loved by God, this can apply to anybody in the movie. It can apply to Salieri just as much as Mozart. So is Salieri loved by God and he just can't see it? Because he won't open his eyes enough?
Yeah. I mean, everybody's loved by God.
Right.
So, yeah.
And so we have those two people in here. Right.
Yeah. And Salieri does turn away.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, he just thinks that, he's just so wrong on what he's seeing in his own life.
Because he only sees it through the prism of his own desires.
Yeah, his own desires,
He never stops and asks, what does God want me to do with this? I already know what God wants me to do with this, he says.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And I know what God should be rewarding me with, because this is what I want, and therefore I'm furious with him for not giving it to me.
Right. Yep. It has nothing to do with the good of others at all.
No.
Yeah, there's no love there.
Yeah, or even just, he could have been so much more satisfied had he gone down a different path.
No question.
This is the thing. Yeah, we turn away from, we think we know what God wants. It doesn't work. We finally let go and see where we wind up and on whatever thing it is that we're struggling with. And often it's, if we can get over ourselves, it's very rewarding. Maybe not all the time.
I mean, you're absolutely right. That's what he's missing, you know.
Yeah.
He's a very unhappy person. And happiness is nowhere near him, and it's not going to come.
No, but that's why he's in the madhouse.
Yep. He's just gone down the road of madness. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the answer to the, you know, all men are equal in God's eyes, which the priest says, and he goes, are they?
Are they?
Well, yes, but he has already decided for himself that he's allowed to be angry about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's judging God.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And Mozart. Yeah.
That is funny. I mean, that, you know, there's so much talk about equality and stuff in today's world too. Mm. And this is part of the reason why there's no such thing as that. We all have our different talents, and
right,
there just isn't a way to equalize all of that. You know?
Yeah.
Equality of opportunity is a worthy, worthy, worthy goal.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
mm. To become who we're supposed to be, to have all the ways to, I don't know, it's just, yeah, opportunity, like you say, support ourselves, and help the ones we love and all the things.
Mm-hmm.
But we aren't the same. And what a boring world it would be if we were.
That's right. We each have our stuff.
Yeah.
We each have our stuff.
We do.
Yeah.
We
mm-hmm.
do.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Yeah, and this really illustrates all that to me as well. Now what did I know? Again, I don't know what's historically accurate or whatever, but what did Mozart have when he died? Did you say tuberculosis?
Nobody really knows. They think it might have been a combination of tuberculosis and alcoholism.
Okay, gotcha. But yeah, it's like he died of exhaustion, you know, and it's like
the way they
and Salieri, sort of steered him to it, right?
He steered him to he was like, should we just take a rest? This Mozart, I'm not tired at all. I'm as fresh as I can be. And of course, he's just excited about everything. So mm-hmm. Salieri is, I want to get going. It's like, he's dropping dead right in front of you. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then it was just an incredibly nice touch that his wife got home at that time. And then she locks away what they've been writing.
Yeah.
And then Mozart dies, denying Salieri this work that he's been waiting for and he had commissioned, denying him his plan, you know, because he called it a plan.
Yeah.
So, that was interesting too. So it's like, you know, in Salieri's view, God would have did that, right? God,
right.
God made that happen at this moment. And
God's punishing me.
Because of me, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's all on me. It's all me. I'm the center of everything.
Yeah.
Everything that happens is me. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I will tell you one thing that I liked, that this is just a technical thing about the movie
mm-hmm.
that I read or heard somewhere, is that during the writing of the Requiem, and Mozart is, you know, going, wait, hold on, just look, we were at this part. What's happening is he had an earpiece under his wig where they would play the music he would then hum.
Mm.
And then this will be like this, and do, 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 you know, whatever. And then the voices do this. And so they're playing the thing so he can, like, and then was it trombones or tubas or whatever, do dum, dum. And so mm-hmm. he's doing that because they're going to play the music over it later and he has to know what to hum. But it was cutting in and out, so he couldn't always hear it. And so Salieri's going, tell me. And he's like, just a minute. So he just used it like, I'm thinking.
Oh, man.
And so it also kind of made Salieri, and he also wasn't using every word in every line.
Mm-hmm.
And that also put F. Murray Abraham on edge, because he's like, wait, what's happening? So it kind of seemed more authentic that way.
That's cool.
It was a beautiful scene. I mean, I love it. But it's just it so too. Funny thinking it from not being able to hear. Wait, hold on. Okay, so now the voices will do this.
Oh, geez. That is great. That is great.
I know.
F. Murray Abraham was so good. My gosh.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so was Tom Hulce.
Yeah.
Or Hulce, whatever you said his name is. Mm-hmm. Anyway, recently, we watched Parenthood again.
Oh, nice.
I just love that movie so much.
Oh, I love it too. Yeah.
Yeah, we need to talk about it sometime.
We definitely need to, yeah.
Put it on the list. Okay. Anyway, but he's in that as the wastrel son, you know, mm-hmm. the fourth kid of the adults. And I was watching going, I just love him so much now. Having seen Mozart again, I always liked him. He's good in that part, but
yes,
you know,
he is.
Oh,
I just need a little more money.
It's a toned down Mozart.
Yeah. This is it. I promise, Dad. This is the one.
You know, usually, if you bet on someone, usually this happens. The winning team doesn't do this. Usually, you can count on it.
Mm.
You know, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, good movie. Really
you
good.
You have seen that movie a lot.
It's been a long time, but I remember it. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah,
it is a favorite.
Yeah. For me, too.
Yeah. I like Steve Martin.
Oh, well.
Talk about a genius. I think he is. The guy is good at everything he seems to try.
Mm-hmm. There's a new documentary out about him.
Oh, good.
I'm not sure if it's on TV or it's a movie.
Uh-huh.
But I was just reading a review of it in the paper today. I still get a newspaper. And they liked it.
Oh, that's neat.
So, yeah.
Cool. Well, good. Did you? Yeah. So there's this audiobook company called Pushkin.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they did one called So Many Steves, Afternoons with Steve Martin. And I don't know, it's maybe 4 hours long or something like that, but it's like a long interview where he kind of talks about the different stages of his career. It was great. And then they have another one called Miracle and Wonder, which is Conversations with Paul Simon. And it is really terrific. Really terrific.
I wonder, those sound familiar. So either you've told me or maybe somebody's gotten one of those for my husband.
Okay.
He would love reading those.
Yeah, those are great. And they're audio. I don't know that they exist in print. They're
okay,
audio.
Okay, well, and because I think they do Malcolm Gladwell, too.
Oh, yeah, they
or
do.
Maybe he's part
I don't know if he's part of it or what, but yeah.
Yeah, he's featured.
Revisionist History is a podcast that they produce as well.
That's right. Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. And I see that they have one called A Life in Lyrics with Paul McCartney. So I'm going to have to listen to that.
Need to be getting my husband some audiobooks, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, really well, good stuff. So apart from that.
But anyway, it is all tied together with me because, you spurred it with Parenthood, but it really is just this creativity and this creative genius stuff, so... Which this movie just portrayed so well. And it's like, how do we greet that is a question you're asking. We don't greet that the way Salieri did with jealousy and manipulation. We greet it. We should greet it with openness and show me, show me what this is. And
well, that's, because even if we can't be, immediately open to it, the show me is a great prompt because back to Steve Martin, when I was reading about the documentary, it was talking about how his career changed once he decided to leave stand-up and he left it at the height of his stand-up career.
Yeah.
And they were talking about, excuse me, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'd forgotten that phrase and the King Tut stuff, all the banjo, everything.
Yeah.
But now I'm thinking about as he was finding his new career and his new path, even if you didn't like Steve Martin in something like The Jerk, which I did not, at some point he turned into something who was very likable and accessible to a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he was acting in Parenthood, or there's a movie called All of Me.
Yeah,
that he did with Lily Tomlin, which I'd forgotten how funny that was. We were watching that about a year ago, and I was laughing out loud through so much of it. But what it did was, it was kind of the crossover movie for me where he was allowed to be an actor who was acting and kind of showing his feelings some.
Mm-hmm.
But he also was having to do that physical comedy that I'd forgotten he was so good at.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and he's so good at physical comedy. So you could kind of see where he was kind of moving towards like the guy now that we see only Murders in the Building.
Mm. Oh, I love that show so much.
I know. And unfortunately, they said they barely talk about it in this documentary. However, but you think about a career like that and you think about somebody like they portray Mozart here or other people who've only been appreciated by certain crowds. And I'd watch people and I've been guilty of this myself. You go, oh, I don't like that person because of this. Mm-hmm. And you have to be reintroduced to them later to say, oh, but this part I do like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the show me why it matters. Show me what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you don't get it. Maybe you don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But you've at least tried it, given mm-hmm. it a chance.
Yeah, so but you haven't reacted with jealousy. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I want
that'll
to.
That'll just kill you. I mean, as this shows.
Yeah, because we never talk about the fact that, or the movie doesn't really address, when Mozart dies in this movie, Salieri is middle-aged. When we're seeing him at the beginning and end and other little current parts, he's old.
Yeah.
So what's he been living with for all that time before he tries to kill himself?
Yeah.
And
makes
doesn't
wonder
even
if that
do
was
that
the first
well.
Time he tried, yeah.
Yeah. A mediocre suicide.
Right. He's the king of mediocrity.
That's it.
That's right. The patron saint of mediocrity, I think is what he said.
Oh, but that's it. Okay. That's it.
And
it,
okay. That's something else. Yeah. Wow.
Well.
Just brilliant. What a brilliant show.
Oh, I know. I'm so glad that I was encouraged to try it again.
That's really good.
Yeah, because I was doing the same thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like an atypical movie to be released in the 1980s, too.
Well, and it won so many Oscars, I think.
Yeah. So, in 1984, we had like 2010, Dune, Once Upon a Time in America. I just kind of called this up.
But is that what was up for an Oscar? Look at what was in the Oscar
what was in the
list.
Oscars, okay.
Because it won, I think it was nominated for 10 and won 8, something like that.
Wow, that's great.
Like F. Murray Abraham won.
Mm-hmm. Did he really? That's good.
I think so. Well, I think he and Tom Hulce were both up for the same best actor. Now we have to look.
I'm looking it up right now.
Prepared.
Let's see.
Okay.
Yeah,
1980s. So it'd be the 1985 Oscars, I guess.
Okay. Let's see, 1985?
Yeah. Oh, Purple Rain, best original song. How can I forget? No, wait, I never saw it. Speaking
and,
of people,
you know, that's
I just...
interesting, too, because, you know, Prince dresses kind of like Amadeus on stage anyway.
Well, they say, I was listening to this podcast, and they said Prince loved this movie and adapted a lot of his personal style based on that kind of sensibility.
Wow, yeah.
So let's see.
Yeah, you're right. So actor in a leading role, F. Murray Abraham and Tom Hulce or Hulce. And then
whatever.
Jeff Bridges for Starman, Albert Finney for Under the Volcano, and Sam Waterston from The Killing Fields. And F. Murray Abraham won. Yeah.
Well, and then so best director was Milos Forman for Amadeus and the best picture. Amadeus.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
So the best director, he was up against Woody Allen for Broadway Danny Rose, which is hilarious. Roland Joffe for The Killing Fields, David Lean for A Passage to India, and Robert Benton, Places in the Heart. Mm. So these were all big movies that are still big.
Yeah.
The best picture was The Killing Fields, A Passage to India, Places in the Heart, and A Soldier's Story, which I don't remember. That's the one I don't remember. But
yeah.
Anyway, so...
cool.
But best screenplay based on another medium, you know, just, it just went through and sucked stuff up.
Cool. Good for them.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. And I can't believe that Ghostbusters and Footloose were not nominated.
That's because they limited it.
Unbelievable.
Think about now in the original ones where they'd have 10 movies nominated. And now when they'll have 10 movies nominated, they might've been in there.
They might've been in there. Yeah.
Because I think I told you about how we have been going through year by year, watching the movie that won, and then as many of the nominated movies as we could either find or cared to watch.
Oh,
some
that's
of them
cool.
We just go.
Yeah.
Yeah, we started with like 1933.
Wow, cool.
Maybe, or 34, because that's when you could reliably get all movies with sound, and you could find enough of the movies. And
oh, nice.
We're helped because SMU with its big film school is here. So the library, again, has a lot of stuff for them. And so, yeah, now we're up to 1938, I think.
Cruising right along.
Yeah, but it's fascinating because there will be like 8 to 10 movies nominated every year. And it's everything.
Wow.
It's, you know, A Tale of Two Cities. It's The Ziegfeld Follies. It's, you know, Fred and Ginger doing a dance one. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, something deadly serious. We're watching a whole bunch of gangster movies, all kinds of things.
Love it. Oh, yeah. That's fun. That's got to be a great time.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been watching a few myself. Let's see. The ones that I've been looking at are more modern, but, you know, I just kind of started to look at the last few years, but I watched Barbie finally because I felt that? Like I needed to know it for cultural reasons.
Yeah.
It was fine. I mean, it was pretty, it was, you know, I don't know what to say about it. It was like, I thought it was good. I thought it was a good movie. It, you know, the sets and everything were very cool. What the, that was very imaginative.
I certainly could watch it. I'm not that interested. I never cared about Barbie, but I get that's not what the point is.
Yeah.
But I would. Here's why I would watch it. Ryan Gosling. I love Ryan Gosling, and it's he's good looking. But it's he's ever since Lars and the Real Girl. Mm. I mean, that man can act in anything. Okay,
oh, yeah.
I've seen him in Good and Mean. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just love him. He's so good.
Well, you get to see an IM number with him too.
So I've heard. Of course, Ken's going to get to dance.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's fun. And then I watched Argo, which was actually a rewatch. I'd seen that a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. That one's great.
Yeah. It's a very good movie.
Did it win?
No, I think it was just nominated. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm not even in the same year, obviously. I was just kind of poking around at him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. But yeah, thank you for this movie. Because I do love it, and it is a favorite. I didn't realize how much of a favorite till I saw it again. I was like,
oh,
so good.
Well, I'm so glad.
Yeah, just it's great.
Yeah.
I could watch it again right now.
Oh, so. Wow. Well, I will say I watched it a month ago, and that's when I went, we have to watch it. I'm rearranging my what I chose.
So I love it.
I watched it again last night or the night before. Whenever I watched it, I loved it. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, good, good. So what's up next for us?
Oh, what is?
It is a book, Passage by Connie Willis.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. A little bit
diving
of...
diving into this.
Yeah. Near-death experiences.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
It's a science fiction novel. Style. And then the science fiction novel. Yeah, that's I consider it so. There's science being done. Anyway.
All right, you're right. Never mind. Ignore
so, yeah,
the
there is a scientist at the center, the main character who is investigating near-death experiences.
Yeah.
And, but yep, that's what's happening in that.
Okay.
Very good. You bet.
All right.
Looking forward to
it. I've read it before, but it's been a long time.
Good, 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 good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, at this, I'll take that out. I guess I was going to say Happy Easter, everybody. I guess it still will be Easter. Because
it's Easter
lasts
until Pentecost,
a while.
That's which is
right.
in May. Yeah.
Okay, so I can. So happy Easter, everyone. As this comes out, it will be Easter time. So happy Easter, and God bless all of you.
Everyone. Oh, it's the wrong movie, but the sentiment goes no matter what.
Absolutely. All right, well, take care, everyone.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.